podcast uses profanity and topics may be disturbing for some listeners. Listen at your own risk. Welcome to Hell on Heels Podcast. I'm Bryce.
I'm Amanda.
And hello, welcome back.
Hi.
I don't know if this is muffling the sound or not. So
it is, actually. Okay. It's working.
So I'm just going to talk the entire time like this.
That doesn't bother me at all.
In case anyone's wondering, I have a child crying. I have the mama's boy not wanting to hang out with dad.
Because literally, how dare you? What are you thinking?
I don't know how I could think that that would be acceptable. Oh, he's here.
Yeah. Poor boy.
So in case anyone's wondering, the mama's boy is mamaing real hard. Okay, he's calming down. Binky's force into his mouth.
Do I need to ask, how is everything?
Everything's fine. We're good. I have some whiny ass boys.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
He's winding up. He knows I insulted him. No, it's all good. Hanging out. Nothing really new. I already showed you all the new stuff that I bought today. Well, the new lamp I bought today. Oh, that reminds me. Hey, Cody, while I'm thinking about it, it's not Maisie trying to chew up the boys' clothes. It's Ben's. I caught him in the act.
Little jerk.
Yeah, we found one, and it was a newborn outfit, so they're almost out of it. I found one outfit, or one onesie, that it was chewed through on the shoulder, like there was probably spit up on it,
yeah.
And they pulled it out of the dirty clothes. Well, I found that a couple weeks ago, and I thought it was Maisie. Caught a dog today settling in to chew on a swaddle. Not a swaddle, a burp rag.
Yeah.
Yeah, caught him in the act. He looked
poor
real
Maisie.
Guilty. Well, it just wasn't like it wasn't torn through like how I would expect Ben's.
Yeah.
Anyways, how are you?
Well, I am sure you can tell am on my third sinus infection this summer. So
you're never getting away from sinus infection. You are the sinus infection queen.
I hate it here. And by here, I mean Earth. So, I don't know. I'm just
Jesus, did that fly attack you?
No. Oh my God. The damn map that you bought is on the wall right behind my desk, and the top corner just came off. So it fell forward and just, I don't know, out of reaction. I thought it was something, you know, like much bigger and heavier falling towards me. No, not.
You thought it was something coming to get you.
Yeah, like I thought, I don't know, the wall was falling or something. No, it's just that top piece of the poster. So it just kind of like fell and then it stopped. But yeah.
Yeah. In case anyone's wondering, he jumped.
I was braced. I was ready for an earthquake. I don't know.
Apparently.
But yes, I am always so I'm going to have to see an allergist. But I'm going to do that next year because I'm also planning a tubal litigation. Why do I keep saying
tubal
that?
Litigation?
I am taking my ovaries to court. I'm suing them. I do that every time. A tubal ligation. I'm planning tubal that litigation. Next year. So... yeah, what I'll probably do is wait until I'm going to try to make it to the end of the year. Because if I can just make it to fall, like, they'll start easing down.
You hear that?
So
ease off.
It's a toss up. If I get another one, I might go to the allergist. But if not, I'm going to be like, you know what? I can go next year and the insurance can pay for most of it.
Well, can't you go this year and the insurance will pay for most of it?
No.
Oh.
We have a high deductible. And our deductible is not even the highest. I think we have the middle because of my medical problem. But it's still just off the wall high.
I mean, I have a high deductible plan too, but we done met that this year.
Yeah. My kids were born in November, both of them. So I missed that chance both times.
What you should have done was plan any surgeries or doctor's visits for you and James end of November, beginning of December.
I think we did. I think I have, like, our yearly wellness or whatever with our general practitioner, which I never had until I started dating. No, I didn't do it when we were dating until I married James. And he's like, you got to go to the doctor once a year. And I'm like, Why? I already know I'm sick. Why do I gotta go? So yeah, we do that now. And we do that at the end.
That's covered by insurance, though, as preventative. So you would never even pay for that one. But
they try to make me. They're always like, you have a copay. And I'm like, no, I don't. And then they're like, oh, no, you don't. I know. Thanks. Also have an HSA. So get it out of there.
Speaking of health insurance, would you like to know? I think I've already told you how astronomically high it was for the boys in the NICU.
Yes, please tell me about their spa visit. How much was that?
Well, I got bills, multiple bills for each of them.
Well, you got two babies, so.
No, for each of them.
Oh.
Because the original number I sent you, that was just for the NICU stay. That was the hospital charge. That didn't include the doctors that came and rounded on them. I don't remember the full number, but it was more than $250,000 for each of them.
Your bougie children.
They are, in fact, my designer babies.
Yes.
Let's not forget that. Yeah, you're a designer baby in every aspect. You just had to be astronomically expensive to get here. Astronomically expensive when you did get here. Thank goodness for insurance. So for any of you that are not in the US, let me just say $250,000 is not what I'm going to pay. My insurance is going to pay that. I will at most pay less than $10,000.
Depending on insurance, but yeah.
No, I'll only pay $9,000 at most.
Okay.
That's my
I can't remember what mine is. I think I don't know.
No.
I know for Annie, I got a bill just from the hospital for Annie and Lee. It was both about, which now that I say that out loud, that's messed up. Because with Annie, I had two insurance. I had insurance and James had insurance. We had two coverages. But for both of them, we got a bill for about $1,400, I think. And that's just from the hospital. So like, you know, I still owe the pediatrician and the anesthesiologist and all of this very specific doctors. But I had a kid with insurance cheaper than getting taken to the hospital in an ambulance. So how about that?
You say that, but they charge significantly more.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they do.
Because like I said, $250,000 is just what the hospital charged. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure my insurance paid less than $80,000.
Yeah.
And the rest was written off.
Yeah, our insurance sucked. Everybody.
Yeah. So anyway,
joke.
Yeah, so I got, first of all, one of these children, one of my designer babies, likes to be beaten up and brutalized because I have to spank his butt to get him to calm down, as I am demonstrating now.
Makes sense. Okay.
You like to be beaten and brutalized on your bum, huh? Yeah, I don't know why. but he likes his butt pats. And then the other one, he's just chill behind me as long as he's got his binky in his mouth. But that's how it's going for me. I'm getting all the bills and going, oh, another one. Good thing my insurance has already paid everything. It's already paying everything.
Yeah, why are you even sending these to me? Just forward them to my insurance.
So this is actually insurance. Like I'm getting, bless you. I'm getting emails from my insurance saying a new claim has processed. And I'm like, what claim? I haven't been to the doctor. The boys haven't been to the... Oh, okay. That's what it is. So there we are. We got our designer babies with their spa-like treatment for the first month of their life. And here we are. Here we are. Now they're just being beaten and abused all day long.
They're so incredibly neglected.
So neglected that they're gaining more than an ounce a day.
Oh, that's great, though.
It is great because they're supposed to gain at least an ounce a day because that was just the standard for preemies.
Uh-huh.
They're gaining more than an ounce a day.
Hell yeah.
Huh. You're getting chonky. I wouldn't be surprised if he's almost 10 pounds.
Cool. Big old boy. Yeah, she was holding
Leo.
JJ earlier? Or was it Leo? When I was like, he's doubled in size. You can't even hold him.
Leo.
Okay. I don't know. Yeah, Leo. Like, you can't even hold him with one hand anymore. You can't football spike your babies. Spike? No. Football, pass. Don't spike them either.
I mean, don't spike them. Don't throw them.
Yeah, don't do any of that.
I won't spike you. It's fine, kiddo. But yeah, so that's where we are. That's where we is. Anyways. Anything else you have to share with the world?
You know what? I don't believe so. I'm looking at my notes. No, I don't see anything in my notes. So if I do, I forgot to write it down.
Oh, you don't want to share socials?
I don't, but you can.
Oh, okay. Well, we do have... Amanda doesn't remember the socials, that's why.
No, I don't.
So we do have the socials. We have all of them that we can think of. So Facebook, Helen Heels Podcast. Instagram, Helen Heels Pod. X, formerly Twitter, Helen Heels Podcast. Nope, I'm sorry. Instagram is Helen Heels Podcast. X is Helen Heels Pod. I don't know.
Still why doing better than I would have.
I'm hanging in there, guys. But you can also find us on Linktree. So if you're having issues getting the links to any of our things, Discord, Patreon, anything like that, you can just Google Helen Heels Podcast Linktree. We should be the first thing that pops up. And then we do have our email up and going. So if you want to email us suggestions, comments, whatever it is, you can email us helenheelspodcast@gmail.com. And then, like I said, we do have our Discord and our Patreon up and going. So if you want to join on Discord or Patreon, you can join in those two places. And if you do enjoy our show, listening to the stories that we share, make sure to tell your friends and family to share or to listen as well. That way we can continue to grow and creating episodes for you guys. And then with that being said, I think Amanda has a story.
I do. I'm going to tell y'all at the beginning of the episode this time, I have a two-parter. Because I know last time I just kind of, we got to the end and I was like, oh, by the way, I'm not finishing this. Not doing that this
time. Yeah, no surprises this time.
So this is a two-parter. It was actually suggested by James, my husband, which is, that's the whole reason we started this podcast, because our husbands don't talk true crime.
Because our husbands suck.
Yeah, the losers. Well, James has been much more attractive this week because he's actually like we have been discussing this like in detail. So I've really enjoyed it. And I did find
that's probably why I'm getting those TikToks. It was like, hey, look, your friend Amanda is enjoying her husband's company a lot more this week.
And we're not having any more children. Okay.
I'm just saying TikTok keeps sending me stuff that says someone with the initial A is pregnant. And I would if it were my sister, she would have told me by now. So
I have only taken antibiotics for one out of these three sinus infections for exactly that reason, because I don't want to take any chances. Okay. So I just suffer until I get better.
You don't want another one of these? Look how cute. Oh, look, there's the other one. He's walking Gigantosaurus.
You can have him. That's fine.
So mean. She's so mean.
Anyway. Yes, so this is a James suggestion, and I took it and ran into two half episodes with it. And I want to shout out a specific YouTuber, because I got so much information from a video that he did on this. It's like a 2-hour video. I think he just released this YouTube video 9 days ago. Oh. And I'm pretty sure this guy, James, said he's like, his name's Veritas. And James said he's like a gaming YouTube, but he did such a good job on this. He's a Twitch streamer, a content creator, and a professional software engineer. Damn. So most of his YouTube revolves around like video game stuff. Just what if you have 2 hours and 3 minutes to spare, watch his video, because I had no idea he was into video games. Like, he did such a good job. It was phenomenal. So I wanted to shout him out. But on to my story. On July 7th, 2002. I'm sorry. I already think that's wrong. I thought this was 2001. Sorry. It is. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, I'm right. July 7th, 2021.
2021?
2021. Yeah.
Okay.
Recent.
Well, at first I thought you said 2002, and now I'm just confused because there's just a lot going on. You probably said 2022.
I don't know what I said, but I know it was wrong. July 7th, 2021, police get a call from a man who says that his parents are missing. 50-year-old Bart and 53-year-old Krista Halderson, they were last seen July 1st. Their son said that he helped them pack for a trip to Langlade County in northern Wisconsin. Apparently, they had planned a spur-of-the-moment trip to a family cabin that was about 3 hours north. So, police drove out to the Windsor home, and sorry, that's not true. The son went to the police station. I don't know why that bullet's there. I got those mixed up. Anyway, their son, Chandler, he drove to the police station, and he told the police that his parents had been picked up by some unknown friends that morning before he woke up. And
wait, how would he know that?
They like had told him the night before.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And he told police, like, this was kind of a spur of the moment, like, last minute trip. He said that the night before, he had mentioned helping them pack plumbing supplies from the basement into the cars. So they were supposed to just be going to do, like, some routine, like, general maintenance, I guess. And decided to go on 4th of July weekend. So I figure maybe they had a long weekend and they're like, hey, we haven't been to the cabin in a while. Let's go, you know, just, I don't know. He said it was spur of the moment. But they left on the 1st and Chandler had not heard from his parents since Sunday, July 4th.
So wait, what day was it that he went to the police station?
He went to the police station on the 2nd. And that date is wrong too. I'm sorry. Jesus.
The so last much time for doing all this research. Hot damn.
It's in my head for once and not on the paper. And I was rereading all this. So the last time he saw them was the night of July 1st. It was a Thursday. They left early Friday morning on the 2nd. And the last time he heard from them was the 4th. It was a Sunday, the 4th of July. His mom had texted him saying that they made it and they were going to go to the parade. And he hasn't heard from them since then. And now his phone calls were going to voicemail. Now, Krista, she was really quickly missed at her job. She has a friend and coworker, Dan Croninger, who he immediately knew something was up when she didn't show up Friday. She never, no called, no showed. She was a good employee. She came to work on time. She didn't really miss work. And it was strange enough that she didn't tell Dan that she was missing work, but she would definitely let their boss know. And her and Dan, they were tight. Like, they hung out outside of work. Like, Dan had Brian's phone number. Bart, what is wrong with me? I'm on medicine.
I'm going to blame it on them. You're, of course, going to blame it on medicine.
Oh, my God. He even had Bart's phone number. So they were close. And I'm telling you, Dan is a homie. Okay? After he got off work that day, he drove over to the Halderson home to check on him. And police would later corroborate this with the neighbors' security footage. Dan was seen pulling into the driveway at about 4:45 p.m. on July 2nd. He knocked on the door, and when he didn't get an answer, Dan, he's not taking an L on this. He started looking in the windows, and he said everything seemed fine. He noticed a coffee table was, he said, turned on its side, so it didn't, he said it was strange, but like everything else was fine. So he went around and he looked in the garage window and he saw that both of their cars were still there, both Bart and Krista's car. And he's like, okay, that's, you know, that's strange. As he's heading around to the back of the house, Chandler comes out of the side door and he's in a towel and he's kind of like, can I help you? And Dan was like, yeah, where's your parents? And so Chandler told him that they had gone to the cabin that weekend. And that really made Dan feel better, especially because Chandler told him they don't always get really good reception up there. Sometimes they have to fight to get a text message in or out.
Mm-hmm.
And so Dan was like, okay. Like, he said he was relieved at that point. And he kept in touch with Chandler that weekend. They would text back and forth. He even invited him over Sunday on the 4th of July. Because Chandler called him and said he was bored. He didn't really have anything to do. So Dan invited him over. They watched fireworks. And he told Dan that he had actually talked to Krista earlier that day. And there's text messages that show Krista texting Chandler's phone at 11 that morning. It says, made it safely, can't get anything through, and yes, it's packed. Going to White Lake today for the parade and will be home Monday night or Tuesday early. Love you lots. Chandler told the police that, like, after he got this message, he was a little relieved because he said, and I quote, they're safe, they're alive.
Okay, so like that comfort.
Yeah.
Of everything's good.
Yeah, because he had texted her when she said, and yes, it's packed. He had texted her trying to check in and like said something along the lines, you know, are you having trouble getting calls out or something? And again, this also made Dan feel better because Dan is a true friend. Y'all, get you a Dan if you don't have a Dan. Because he knew Krista had a doctor's appointment early that week. And he was like, she would not miss this appointment. It had already been rescheduled one time. So he knew that, you know, she was looking forward to it. As, you know, as much you can, a doctor's appointment.
She was aware of it. It wasn't.
Yeah. She didn't want to have to reschedule it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I get it. Like, there are some doctor's appointments where I'm like, that could be canceled and or rescheduled.
Yeah, and then there's some where I'm just like, for the love of God.
Let's get this over with.
Let's do this.
Right. Because I get that. That was me with the birth control, the arm thing. So I was like, please, I want to get it done and over with. Get it in my arm. But I also don't want to do it.
Yeah, that's me with the Tuba litigation.
The Tuba litigation?
Yeah, the Tuba litigation. Call my lawyer. We got to get this done.
I was going to say, I want to be in that courtroom.
he knew that this was important to her. So when Monday or Tuesday passed and she still wasn't at work, Dan knew something was up. So the morning of the 7th, Dan reached out to Chandler and he was like, hey, this isn't right. The 7th was a Tuesday. This isn't right. We got to call the cops. 7th wasn't a Tuesday.
The 7th was, because if the 4th was a Friday, the 7th was a Wednesday.
Yeah. So Tuesday would have been the 6th. See, this is also why my bullets are whole sentences, because this is what happens when I try to go off the cuff.
I don't have to do full sentences. Half the time, I don't even read the full sentence anyways, so it doesn't matter.
I can't do that. My brain will not allow me. So, yeah. That Tuesday, Dan was like, we got to tell somebody. This isn't right. And so Chandler went down that day. He went to the police office. He filed a report.
Chandler's their son, right? I'm not losing it.
No, you're right. Chandler is the son. Dan is the friend.
Was Dan a friend or a boss?
He was a friend and a co-worker, not her boss.
Okay. I was going to say, if he's her boss, he's a pretty good boss for at least being like, hey, bitch, find this bitch. I don't know what he would have said.
That, exactly, probably.
Probably.
The next day, Chandler spoke to a reporter with a local news station. And this reporter later said that Chandler seemed to be in shock. I mean, I would if my parents were missing and a news reporter's knocking on my door the next day, but that's just me. And he did agree to the interview, but he told him, like, I don't want to be on camera. So they just had him, like, you know, right off camera, and they were talking to him. So he wasn't filmed, but you could hear him. Okay. And he told He told the media, you know, the same story. They went to the cabin. They left Friday, supposed to be back Tuesday, planning on doing some repairs. And he hasn't heard from him. And he told the reporter that he was trying to remain positive. He told them they could be out on a boat having fun. They could be at the casino with their cell phones turned off. And he said, quote, "We'll find them. It's better not to listen to the negative theory."
I mean, I get it, trying to stay positive.
Yeah, trying to stay positive. Krista Rae Frater, she was born January 25th in 1968 in Madison, Wisconsin. And she graduated from Madison East High School in 1986. Bart A. Halderson, he was born May 14th, 1971 in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Can I just say, if I ever go anywhere, I want to go to Sheboygan just for the name.
Hey, do it.
I love Sheboygan, Washington. Nope. I love Sheboygan, Wisconsin, and I know nothing about it. I don't even know what state it's.
You just said Wisconsin.
Yeah, but the first time I said Washington. It's absolutely Wisconsin.
I'm just going with what you're saying, okay?
I just like the word Sheboygan. I tried to name the kids that, but James wouldn't let me, so.
Did you know the word Sheboygan when you tried to name the kids is the real question?
Oh, no, that was a lie.
Oh, okay.
I did know about this town. I don't know why. It's just a name that's stuck in my head. Maybe I lived there in a past life.
Maybe you'll live there in a future life or in this life.
It could happen. I don't think I could talk James in Wisconsin. I would probably move there for the cheese alone. These curds, can you imagine? Okay, I'm sorry. He was born in Sheboygan, Washington. He graduated from Valders High School in 1989. And both Bart and Krista graduated from the University of Wisconsin-Madison with their bachelor's degree. They got married July 30th, 1994. Bart, he was a managing director at an accounting firm. And Krista worked as a customer service assistant at a body shop, like an automotive body shop.
Now, her boss... that you had to clarify that. An automotive body shop.
I mean, it wasn't candles and shit. Like, it wasn't the body shop.
I just think it's funny you had to.
Her boss described her as warm and caring. He said, like, she genuinely cared about everybody that come in there, whether, like, they came in or they talked to her on the phone. He was constantly getting compliments because of, like, how she treated people, how she cared about their customers. Bart and Krista had two sons. They had Mitchell, who was 24, and Chandler, who was 23 at the time of their disappearance. Mitchell, he had a career in tech. He was engaged to be married, and he was currently living with his fiance. And Mitchell, he said it was strange that Krista didn't reach out to him to say that they were leaving. He described her as kind of like a helicopter parent and said that she would text for any reason she could think of just to talk to him. She would reach out and text. But he said he wasn't worried about them until Chandler told him that he hadn't heard from them and they were supposed to have been back.
Okay.
Now, Mitchell, he actually drove the 3 hours to the cabin to look around, and he led police around the property looking for their parents. But even when police got his permission to break the locks and enter the cabin, they found nothing showing that anybody had even been there in like a while.
Okay, so they definitely weren't there.
No. Now, Chandler, he still lived at home with Bart and Chris. And Chandler, he had a lot going on. He volunteered as a diver with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Rescue Team. He was currently enrolled in Madison Area Technical College, and he was also working towards a degree in tech. He had an internship at an insurance company. He was an IT administrator. He had worked there for a little over a year. And he had recently landed a job with SpaceX. He was very excited for this. And he had a girlfriend, Kat, that they'd been dating for about 2 years. And she was actually supposed to move with him to Florida when he took on this new job. Earlier in their relationship, he had cheated on her. And he honestly kind of sounded like a douche. In one of the interviews, one of his friends said that it was early when they started college. I guess he had shared either an apartment or a dorm. It was unclear with Chandler. And Chandler just cheated on her like crazy, like brag about how much he cheated on her.
I don't understand why people do that.
I don't either. But they did eventually work it out. And they were working through their differences. They had been for a while. And in a like effort to, I guess, build back trust, they shared Snapchat location with each other. And Kat said that they did the majority of their talking through Snapchat anyway. So they had a rough patch.
I don't really trust the Snapchat location.
I think it's like, I don't know how accurate it is.
I don't think it's very accurate, but it doesn't really matter because I just don't feel like I trust it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't track James's movement. He can go do what he wants. That's fine.
My only thing is like when Cody works in Salt Lake and I want to at least have a general idea of when he's at least headed home in traffic. I like to see that. Do I have full access to his location? No, but I would like to see when he's driving home.
Cody, you listening?
No.
So after he reported them missing, police start putting together a timeline of what happened July 1st, because this is the last time they were seen.
Mm-hmm.
So Krista, that neighborhood surveillance video shows her car leaving the driveway at 7:29 a.m. There were time records that showed her clocking in at 7:41. She texts Chandler at 1:40 and it said, "Hope things are going well, thinking about you," with a little smiley face. And it wasn't the emoji. It was the colon parentheses smiley face. And I just thought that was precious. I think that's so much sweeter.
Emojis.
At 4:58, she left work and headed home. And that same video showed her getting back home at about 5:13. Now, Bart, he was working from home that day. And we know he called his brother that morning because it was his brother's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
He ate lunch with Chandler at about 12 or 12:30. And Chandler said they watched a little bit of TV afterwards. And we know he sent his last work email at 2:07. And then he sent a text to Chandler that said, "I'm ready whenever you are," at 2:10. Now, Bart's last appointment for the day was at 3 p.m. And that appointment said Chaz, M-A-T-C. Chaz is what they called Chandler. That's what he went by. And that's a this weird
nickname. I hate that nickname.
I'm so glad you said that. Because that's why I don't call him Chaz. Because I was like, I don't like it at all.
It makes me so uncomfortable for some reason. Not like, I just imagine for whatever reason, the Chaz of the world, I just have this is probably just a me stereotype that they're really loud and obnoxious. And they think they're like womanizers. I don't know. It's probably coming from a movie or something. I just feel like the Chaz of the world. I
can't like they're obnoxious frat boys.
Yes.
Yes. That's the image I have too. Sorry to all you obnoxious frat boys out there, but
sorry to the Chaz of the world that are not that way, but
yeah,
go by a different nickname.
Yeah. I don't like it. So I'm not you. Okay. So Chandler was having trouble. He was like about to graduate, but he was having trouble getting his transcript and a certificate for a program that he had completed from the college. And Chandler and Bart had both been emailing people. They talked to him on the phone, but it seemed like they kind of kept getting the runaround. So they had this appointment scheduled today, and they actually had one the month before, but they had to reschedule it. And I'll get into that in a minute. Now, Chandler, he was texting Kat throughout the day. So we have, you know, we have a good couple of text messages. Now, she seemed to be supporting him like a lot, like just really supportive, like I'm here for you, B, kind of stuff like that, text messages. And he was feeling upset because he was having a lot of health issues. That month before, he had fallen down the stairs, and that's why that appointment at the college had to be rescheduled. He hit his head multiple times falling down the stairs. He suffered a concussion. He was having neurological symptoms like a foggy head, memory problems, and difficulty concentrating. He also suffered injuries to his neck. He had tingling and numbness in his legs. And the doctor told him that that was likely to get worse. It could potentially turn into paralysis, either partial or total. And he might have to get a colostomy bag. So he was also wearing a neck brace for a little while. He was having trouble walking. He was kind of sounded like he was going through it. He was also told that he would be unable to fly or drive long distances. So this was potentially going to ruin his chances of working at SpaceX, which was like his dream job.
Mm-hmm.
So Kat texts him a little after one that day. And she texts him telling him that her mom was okay with Chandler hanging out with him though. And he texts back a few minutes later and said that he had overheard his parents were going to the cabin with their friends this weekend. He texts his mom at 3:19, "Dad's phone died, text or call me." And then immediately after that, he said, "And get soda on your way home. I have an extra hour of work." And Krista replied with, "Hey, I will," and another little colon parentheses smiley face. Chandler made a to-do list on his phone at 5:11, and it was like chores for the weekend. It said clean the floors, doorknobs, move shit upstairs, get a job, etc. You know, stuff like that.
Get a job.
Yeah.
No, so just get a job.
On July 8th, this is the day after. We're going back. This is the day after Bart and Krista were reported missing. Chandler and Kat, they were interviewed again. They gave police a few more details. Chandler specifically, but both of them, you know, just gave police a few more details here and there. I think this is when Chandler told them that they were going to address like a plumbing emergency. And Chandler helped him pack the tools the night before. Chandler's interview lasted about an hour and a half when he asked for a lawyer. And he was immediately arrested for providing false information on a missing persons case and booked into the Dane County Jail. And that's where I'm going to stop.
How dare you stop right there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you the rest next week.
I'll tell you the rest next week. Actually, for me, guys, I hear it on Sunday in 2 days.
Yeah, so. You've got 48 hours-ish.
I have time to recover from the fact that she's toying with me, but it's fine. All right, well, I have a different story for you. Do you want to hear it?
I would love to.
And we're gonna start off this way. Sunday is gloomy, my hours are slumberless. Dearest, the shadows I live with are numberless. Little white flowers will never awaken you, not where the black coach of sorrow has taken you. Angels have no thought of ever returning you. Would they be angry if I thought of joining you? Gloomy Sunday.
I don't know how I feel about that.
We're going to talk about it.
Okay.
So, Rezo Saris, he was born November 3rd, 1889 or 1899. I have conflicting sources.
Is it the guy with the bow tie?
Yeah.
He looks like Pee Wee Herman. A little bit.
Okay. A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
But most sources state he was born and raised in Budapest. Some sources say he grew up in Pomerom. I forgot to Google how to say it. I know how to say Budapest, but it's Austria-Hungary. So he spent most of his life in poverty. Like, he dropped out of a secondary school in his early teens. He joined a traveling circus as an acrobatic performer. Specifically, he was a trapeze artist in the circus.
Oh.
And that was at least until he fell during a rehearsal, and he injured himself, and that would end his trapeze performing days.
Oh.
He would then turn his efforts to acting, and while pursuing his acting career, he would teach himself to play the piano. And he got so good that the theater director would begin staging him as a pianist. And he was so good, he had taught himself to play with only one hand.
This guy needs to calm down.
Right?
Sir, I have no hobbies.
He's teaching himself piano.
Oh my God.
And he does take some time to focus on composing and songwriting and singing, all that fun stuff. And he begins composing songs. And he composes a song known as Vega a Villagnach. I don't know if that's right. That's how you say it in a different language. I'm not even sure what language. Budapest? Okay. Hungary? Hungarian? Hungarian.
Piano?
Sure, yeah. That translates to The World is Ending. And it was written in 1932, and it was published in Hungary in 1933. Now, this is not his only accomplished song, nor his first. He has another one. I'm going to do translated version. One More Night, which was released in 1925. It sold 17,000 copies.
Sure.
And then there was another one that translates, Who Was the Woman Whose Heart? And that one was even more successful than One More Night. Like, he's not doing too bad for himself. But he is best known for The World is Ending, which we're going to talk about. Now, The World is Ending, it becomes a very popular song, though it would take some time to take off. In 1935, Hungarian singer Paul Kalmar would record the song, making it the hit that it, I mean, that Rizzo's dreamed of. And eventually, Laszlo Havor, he would change the song to add a personal touch. So basically, he kept the composition, the music in the background, but he changed the lyrics, and the lyrics would become called Sad Sunday. And in the U.S., Sad Sunday would become Gloomy Sunday. And that was sang in the U.S. by Sam M. Lewis. Now, the song itself is originally, it's very, the original song, Rezo's version, it is about the despair of war. And I mean, it ends with a prayer about people's sins. Like, it's a very downer song. They're all, it's very downer no matter what. And so the lyrics are very dark. And then it was rewritten, and it was then about a man who commits suicide or talks about suicide after his lover's death. So that's that first verse I read to you. So it was, that's the actual lyrics to the song. It talks of, where am I? Angels have no thought of returning you. Would they be angry if I thought of joining you?
So everybody needs to take a breath and calm down.
Yes. Here's another lyric. Gloomy is Sunday, with shadows I spend it all. My heart and I have decided to end it all. Soon there'll be candles and prayers that are sad. I know, let them weep, let them know that I'm glad to go. Death is no dream, for in death I'm caressing you. With the last breath of my soul, I'll be blessing you. Gloomy Sunday.
Okay. It's kind of really pretty, though.
It's very... And Laszlo? Is that his name? Now I can't remember his name, who helped him read it. Laszlo Havor, he was a poet. So he helped rewrite it, and this is the well-known version. Now, it's recorded in the U.S. in 1936. Again, that became popularized by Sam M. Lewis in the U.S., becomes known as Gloomy Sunday, and some American versions include this verse, Dreaming, I was only dreaming, I wake and find you asleep. In the deep of my heart, dear, darling, I hope that my dream never haunted you. My heart is telling you how much I wanted you, Gloomy Sunday.
Okay, so in the American version, nobody died.
At least according to reports in the American version.
Okay.
Now, it's a very popular song, Gloomy Sunday. But at some point, clubs and radio stations, they begin to ban this song. This song would later become known as the Hungarian Suicide Song. And the legend is that the song, not only sad in lyrics, was tragically cursed. According to reports, in the late 1930s, there were at least 100 suicides in Hungary and the U.S. that were linked to this Gloomy Sunday song.
Oh.
So people believe the song is cursed. Or it was cursed. The story goes that the song was referenced in numerous suicide letters or even still playing when the individual was found. One report is that Hungarian police were called out to find that two men had shot themselves at a live musical performance that were playing the song. Another report of a housekeeper that drank sodium hydroxide, and she was reportedly found clutching the sheet music of the song. Another claim was the consultant of the Ministry of Finance. The name I have is Joseph Keller. He would shoot himself with a handgun while in a cab, and his suicide note reportedly quoted the song lyrics. And then you have multiple reports of individuals being pulled from a river that is in Hungary, that were simply clutching the sheet music, and many finding victims with the gramophone still going with the Gloomy Sunday song still playing. So, not looking good. Chills. Not looking great. Now, claims, police start putting this together, and there are claims that police would, like, urge the song to be banned due to the increase of suicides. Though, this is technically unsubstantiated. No one can prove that police were like, please ban the song. I can't find anything that says that for sure that's what happened. Yeah. Anything like that. Now, the suicides, they would spread across Europe. In Germany, you have a shopkeeper that hung themselves and left a copy of the sheet music under their feet, reportedly. An 80-year-old man jumped from his 7-story window with the music playing. A 14-year-old girl drowned herself clutching the sheet music. In Rome, an errand boy passing a beggar was humming the song. The beggar was humming the song. The boy would give him all his money to the beggar and then jump into the river. In London, a woman intentionally overdosed on barbiturates while listening to the song. It would then spread to the U.S., and a 13-year-old in Michigan would hang himself. He had the lyrics in his pocket. In New York, a college student reportedly shot himself after listening to the song. Claims state that in 1937, a man in Indianapolis would hire a soloist to play the song. They claim that the police would hear the song, rush in, and arrest the man, because at this point, a lot of people had kind of started, a lot of cities in the U.S. had started banning the song. They claimed that police would hear the song, rush in, and the man had actually poisoned his own beer and been stopped before he could drink it. So you have a bunch of cities, reportedly, that are putting a ban on this song. You do have a couple where you can see they at least mentioned it, maybe not put the ban on the song yet, but they do mention it. And, you know, this definitely goes a long way. Now, most of these deaths are not verified to be truly linked to the song. The legend still has a grip on everyone. Now, there is also a controversy surrounding the song because Billie Holiday would record a version of the song in 1941. And Billie Holiday's version was banned by BBC. They ban it from being broadcast, and this can be verified. They absolutely banned that song. Now, this was in 1941, and their reasoning for banning the song was that it was detrimental to wartime morale. So they didn't want this really sad, depressing song playing for the people that are in the trenches or even at home that are, you know, it's World War II.
Okay, yeah.
So
fair point.
Yeah. Now, the claims state that the song would cause over 200 deaths by 1945. Now, I do want to throw this out here. None of these can be substantiated. I guess I shouldn't say none. Most of these cannot be substantiated. Now, even with all of this information and knowing that not every death can be substantiated to be linked to this song, the legend gets even more solidified after the remaining life and death of Rezo Saris, the man that created the song. Now, Saris, he was of Jewish descent and he lived in Europe during Hitler's reign. Some sources stated he served in the military but never saw combat. He was just digging trenches and such. During his time serving, his wife would leave him and marry another man.
Oh.
And she would return to him, to Rezo, after it didn't work out with the other man. But funny enough, some sources said his wife left her husband for Rezo's before she left Rezo for another man. So she doesn't have a great track record.
It doesn't sound like it.
No. But he would forgive her. From what I could find, they lived out their life, the rest of their life together. There are some claims that Rezo was taken to a labor camp or a concentration camp. He was able to survive, but his mother, who was detained in a camp, would not survive.
Oh, God.
So that didn't help at all. And now Rezo, after the popularity of his song, even though it was before World War II, he had a lot of issues. First of all, he remained living in poverty. His song was so catchy, he didn't have to live in poverty. But he was so loyal to Hungary that he wouldn't go to the U.S. where he could collect royalties. And then on top of that, his depression worsens with the death of his mother. And in reality, the success of the song actually deepens his unhappiness.
Oh.
Reports state that he believed he would not be able to write any other hit song or any other song at the same level as Gloomy Sunday, and that he essentially thinks that he peaked.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. And like I said, he never traveled to the U.S. to claim his royalties. And he remained a pianist at a restaurant in his hometown. And from the descriptions I could find, it wasn't a great restaurant.
Oh.
So.
Wow. He really fell off.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like, I don't know, like it sounds to me like this song kind of got in his head, though. And he was going through some rough times.
Yeah. Part of it is, I mean, he lived through people saying the song is cursed and causing the suicides. He knows that. Yeah. Some sources say that really affected him as well, or it could have affected him. But on January 11th, 1968, most sources say he was 69 at this time, he would jump from a window. Some sources say from a window, others say from a balcony.
Oh, God.
He would survive the jump, but several days later, he had several broken bones in his body. He's a 69-year-old man jumping off a balcony. Yeah. But he had some broken bones, and while in the hospital, he would strangle himself with a wire. Some sources said it was like holding a cast up, you know, in like the shows where every bone is broken and they have wires holding cast up. Sources say it was that. Other sources don't specify, but he would strangle himself while in the hospital.
Oh my God.
And he would pass away shortly after. Now, like I said, most suicides could not definitively be linked to Gloomy Sunday. There was an increase in suicides in the 1930s. And this was an increase all over the world, likely due to the Great Depression, because it wasn't just the U.S. that went through a depression at that time. So studies that have heard of this curse are looking back and going, okay, yeah, there was an increase. But was it really correlated with the song, or was it correlated with the Great Depression? Now, I couldn't find anything saying there are still suicides happening today. I can tell you right now, the BBC ban was lifted in 2002. And since then, no claims that the song has taken lives that I can find. But a lot of people still believe it to be cursed. Even so, most sources say you can find the song on Spotify, but it will never recommend the song to you. It will never be in like an algorithm for you.
That is kind of wild.
Uh-huh. And I do have the song. Hold up. If you want to listen to it, it is the Billie Holiday version.
Okay.
As I hear Amanda touching, or see Amanda touching her headphones, like I'm ready. Let me actually restart it. That's what I was listening to when we started recording. Or when we got on. What the hell am I looking for? Share screen. And I'll link this for anyone that wants to listen to it.
Okay. Number one. God, I love Billie Holiday.
I know, right? I can't. I love her.
Oh, my God. Her voice. I think it is very eerie, but I think it's very pretty. It's macabre.
Mm-hmm.
But I like it.
It is. I was describing it to, or I guess I would describe it as a haunting song. Like, it's very... Yeah. It's very beautiful. The music's beautiful. Her voice is beautiful. And that, yeah. The music should be the original, what was written by Rezzo.
The music, I feel like they have had to use just that music in a movie or a cartoon or something. And that music was written for the big screen. I feel like
that, yes. So the music has been used, didn't write it down, but the music has been used in different, let me see if I can find it. It's been used in, here it is, blah, 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 the song appeared, I'm not finding it yet, but there is, I had a whole article that talked about where it had been used, and there are different movies and things of that nature where just the soundtrack has been used. But funny enough, even with the BBC ban, it was only the lyrical version. If it had lyrics, it was banned. They would play just the instrumental version.
And see, even the instrumental version, like I found myself not listening to the music and listening to the instrumental because that is still like uncomfortable. Like it's very pretty, but it's just, it made me feel like someone was sneaking up behind me in places.
Yeah, it's a very, it's very beautiful. I feel like that music, if it were used in a movie, it would be playing in the background. Yeah. Of like a bar scene where they've got like the singer or whatever, or even just a pianist, where it'd be like
very Casablanca.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. And I will link the YouTube video, guys, or at least I'll post it on Instagram, all that stuff, or someone will post it. But it's a gorgeous, gorgeous song. Music is beautiful. Billie Holiday, her voice is beautiful.
She's beautiful.
Just, yes. Oh. The whole thing is just, it's just very haunting. So keep in mind, I've already read the lyrics to you. I read the entire song to you guys. So it is a very heavy topic. So if you guys are not feeling like you should be able to listen to that or not in a mental space, I want to remind everyone there is help available with the suicide crisis hotline. In the US, I believe it's just 988 that you can call. Or text. Yep. 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. So you can call or text there for any help that you need. If you're not comfortable doing that, make sure you talk to someone that can get you help. But we want to just make sure that everyone knows it's a very beautiful song, very haunting, but it does discuss a very heavy subject, which is suicide. So anyway, that's my story.
I liked that one. That was a different one.
Yeah, I should have said it before. I didn't think about it because I moved stuff. And it looks like Cody moved it. But it came from my cursed objects book.
Oh, the book that was sitting over there.
Yeah, okay, the book that was under JJ's butt and he was upset because he was sitting on a hard surface instead of my flappy thigh here. Yeah, so my cursed objects book, that's where I found it. And I was like, ooh, we haven't done a song. That's a new one.
I don't think I ever would have even thought to do a cursed song.
Cody brought me the book because he heard me. I didn't even need it. But this book, my cursed object, strange but true stories of the world's most infamous items by J.W. Ocker. So, guys, this has given me some good ideas. I like the song. Yeah. I hope you know this is how it worked. I opened it to one of the pages of the tables of contents. And I just saw the Hungarian suicide song and I went, yep.
There, what page?
I was like 231. Hold on. Getting there. But yeah, it's definitely a beautiful song. Interesting. Curse. So like I said, if you guys don't feel comfortable listening to the song, don't click on the link. But if you do want to hear it and feel like you're comfortable listening, click on the link.
That has to be hard, too, because, like, I was listening to the radio today, and I can't remember who it was. I think it was a country singer, Thomas Rhett? I don't know. He was at the radio station, and they were, like, you know, interviewing him, like they radio stations do. And he said something about, it's like, magical, I think he said, having a song, and everybody loves it, and everybody's singing it, and you hear people singing it. And then I get home today after work and you tell me about this song that everybody hates. That has to be hard on an artist, on somebody who has made so many beautiful songs and, you know, celebrated songs to put this one out. And people are like, not only does this song suck, they're like, you wrote a suicide song. That has to be hard.
The song sucked. Like this was by far his most popular song. It's just that it is so heavy and so sad that a lot of people were like, it's gorgeous, gorgeous. Like I said, it took off because people were recreating it. Very popular people were recreating it. People at the height of their fame were doing their own recordings of it. It's just that you had the stigma with it where it was, oh, be careful. It's cursed.
Yeah.
And then
worded that wrong. Sorry.
But to have the stigma with it, such a negative stigma. Like you said, Thomas Rhett, and he has a song, I think it's called Life Changes. That song, while I was going through infertility, made me cry every time. I couldn't listen to it. Aww. But like that one, it's like I said, it's a very good song, but it's a very positive song, you know, like
right.
I can see people being like, oh, it's a very positive song. Whereas this one, still very popular, so sad. Just so
But you
sad.
Still have like Edgar Allan Poe. He was very macabre. He was a writer and I love him. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's just a personal preference or something, but I think this song is beautiful and I do think it would be sad to have to go through that.
Mm-hmm. So anyways, yeah, I thought it was very interesting. I, like I said, I don't have issues listening to it. I thought it was a gorgeous song. It's just how it was written. So listen at your own risk. If you are okay being cursed, I guess you listen. But if not, then don't listen.
I think it's worth a listen, yeah. Personally.
Yeah.
If you, you know what? Even if you aren't comfortable listening to the lyrics, at least listen to the instrumental version.
You know what? I'll see if I can find an instrumental version and post the link to that as well.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening to Helen Hills Podcast. To see pictures from this episode, you can follow us on Instagram, Helen Hills Podcast, X Helen Hills Pod, or Facebook by searching Helen Hills Podcast. You can find us on Linktree by typing in Helen Hills Podcast. If you want to support us, please like, review, rate, share, and subscribe on your preferred listening platforms. If you want to take your support one step further so we can create additional content for you, you can donate through Patreon, where we're working to release specials for our patrons. If you have your own true crime or paranormal story suggestions or words of encouragement, please email us at helenhillspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to tell your friends to listen with you as well. Bye.
Bye.